Our next public hearing is change of zone number 1697, Land Tech Receiver Services, LLC.
This is an application to consider an ordinance to modify condition number 10, proposed on ordinance number 1573 for change of zone number 1475, the application of Ribera Odyssey, LLC, as amended by ordinance number 2018 for change of zone number 1697, the application of Peninsula at Long Neck, LLC, for the peninsula. A MRRPC, Medium Density Residential District, Residential Plan Community, to extend the time for construct and open for use the golf clubhouse, excuse me, and Nature Center facilities. Bear with me a second. I hear you went a little quicker than I thought. For the benefit of the commission, I'm passing down copies of the site plan, 8.5 by 11 site plan submitted by the applicants with their request. I received request on June 4th, we received the request to modify. On November 12th, we received an information packet, which I'll have to refer to Mr. Robertson. And today I received a revised proposed amended conditional use paragraph from Mr. Fuqua's office. And I would again have to refer to that to Mr. Robertson, if they can be introduced.
You want me to respond to that now, or I don't know if you wanted to go through all your comments at this point?
I can do my comments first.
Okay, why don't you go through those first?
Okay. We received agency comments, first being from the County Engineering Department. They were received on November 12th. They're a standard memo form. It makes reference to that the site is located in a county-operated and maintained sanitary sewer district. Being the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District, wastewater capacity is available. Ordinance 38 construction is not required. The current system connection charge rate is $3,472 per equivalent dwelling unit. Conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study will be required. The concept plan is not required. The proposal is to modify condition number 10 of change of zone 1475 to extend the time to construct and open for use the golf clubhouse and nature center facilities. Approval of a time extension will not have a significant impact on the sewer system, and the County Engineering Department does not object to this proposal. From the Sussex Conservation District, in the form of a memorandum dated October 26, we are advised that there are three soil types on this site, that the applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation, that there are no storm flood hazard areas affected or tax ditches affected in this area, and that it will not be necessary for any on-site or off-site drainage improvements. And I assume that's due to the location of the facility being pretty much center of the project. In addition to that, over the last several months, I've been receiving emails and a few letters. The first one received was on August 5th from residents and owners within the Peninsula Project, and the last one received on October 20th. I received 70 letters in support of this application. Majority of them basically reference that they desire to see at some time in the future the clubhouse and Nature Center, but that it would be beneficial to all if they wait until the project is financially stable for the construction of a clubhouse. And there are 70 letters received to date. And with, I'll pass those down. If you, I can read them all. I don't think I want to listen to and read 70 different letters. They're almost all the same.
They'll be part of the record.
But they are part of the record and have been since that first date that I received. And, you know, that's all I have unless that we need to resolve the issues of the documents that were submitted.
Mr. Chairman, there were two documents, as Mr. Lank mentioned. The first, well, I should back up. What this is governed by is the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And there's a requirement that documents need to be submitted at least 10 days in advance of the public hearing to be considered by the commission. There is the additional statement that the requirement can be waived by the chairman, or in this case, acting chairman, only upon a showing of good cause, therefore, by the applicant. So that's the basis we're kind of working under with regard to these submissions. The first one I'll talk about is the proposed amended condition number 10. That one I'm not concerned about because it's been the commission's practice to accept proposed findings and conditions during the hearing. I mean, for example, we just had that on the last one, and that happens all the time, so I think that one's fine. Mr. Lank advised me, though, that there was an informational package submitted to the commission for tonight's hearing on November 12th, which would have not been 10 days ago. So what I would recommend in accordance with the rules is to hear from, I guess, Mr. Fuquay as to why that was submitted. I would point out for everybody involved, regardless of whether it's submitted or not, is that it'll be made part of the record for the county council hearing, which will occur at some date in the future, and I'm not off the top of my head certain of that particular date. So it is part of the record with the county council proceedings. The issue the chairman needs to decide as to whether to accept it tonight for planning and zoning's hearing.
Okay. Duly noted. Mr. Fuquay, would you like to give us your interpretation of just cause?
Yes. Again, good evening. For the record, my name is James Fuquay, and I represent the applicant on this case. This is a little bit different in that we're talking about an application to modify conditions, so it's not an entire application for a change of zone or conditional use. Quite frankly, there was a mix-up as to the exhibits being due on the Monday before the hearing. The Monday before the hearing or the Monday before the Monday before the hearing, and that's where we got fouled up. The exhibit itself, I'll tell you, the only exhibits in this are actually the pictures that are located in the back of the document, and they're pictures of the facilities that exist at the peninsula, which I think the county's well aware that they exist. All of the written materials in here are really the presentation I'm going to make, and I can read it if you don't want to admit it. What I wanted to do was, that is our presentation. What I was going to do is kind of summarize what's written here so I don't have to repeat everything that's in the presentation. So I don't know if it's really an exhibit per se. Rather, it's kind of a written version of our presentation.
Okay. Duly noted. Well, I'm going to decide to take Mr. Robertson's advice about the example of the modified condition that you feel as though that is in line with what we normally do. And rolling down that same road, I'm going to stay in line with what we normally do and require the 10 days on this. So I'm not going to allow the exhibit book. And as Mr. Robertson has indicated, you do have plenty of time, as long as there are no Monday mix-ups, to get it in front of county council. So.
All right, well, I assume it's in the record now for the county council. So that'll
it is.
Yeah, it will be.
It's already in.
Okay. My name is James Fuquay, and I'm representing the applicant, who is Lantec Asset Management, LLC. With me seated right back here are Chuck Munn, Jim Anderson, and Tom Henson, representatives of Lantec Asset Management. And as Mr. Lank stated, this is an application to modify condition number 10 of change of zone 1475, which was the original RPC approval for the peninsula development. As I said, the booklet that you're not looking at is a fairly detailed summary of our request, and I'm going to summarize that, maybe refer to some of the information in there that I wasn't going to repeat, but I will repeat. Basically, what I'm going to do is give the background of the peninsula. I want to explain how Landtech Asset Management LLC became involved in the peninsula, and hopefully explain what Landtech found when they became involved, what they have done to date, and what they propose to do specifically regarding condition number 10. The Peninsula RPC was approved by Sussex County Council back in November of 2002. This was a large residential planned community zoned MR, contained 787 acres. It was approved for mixed residential use of a total of 1,404 lots and units. It was approved with extensive recreational facilities, including a Jack Nicklaus Design Championship golf course. At the time of approval, there were 21 conditions placed on the approval. Those conditions included condition number 10, and just summarizing it, condition number 10 stated that the recreational facilities in connection with the RPC would be constructed within 2 years of the issuance of the first building permit. Sales at the peninsula began in May of 2004, as you will recall, that was a time that had become a somewhat booming real estate market. 425 lots and units were sold between May of 2004 and December of 2007, which was approximately 30% of the total lots and units that had been approved. During that time, during the initial beginning of the development and in those 3 years, extensive site improvements were done involving water and sewer, stormwater management infrastructure, and site improvements. And in addition, there were over $48 million spent toward the extensive recreational facilities. And those recreational facilities included the Jack Nicklaus golf course, a driving range, artificial hitting stations for the winter months, two practice greens and one chipping area, a golf pro shop, an outdoor infinity pool, an indoor heated pool, an indoor heated spa, a 3,000-gallon wave pool that's outside, an outdoor poolside heated spa, a health and fitness club that included men's and women's locker rooms, two massage rooms, exercise equipment room, an aerobics room, and a children's playroom. In addition, there was a terrace grill, which is a restaurant, 8 tennis courts, a basketball court, a sand volleyball court, 10 miles of walking, biking, and nature trails, a fishing pier, a boardwalk and kayak launch dock, a community garden, a bay beach and community dock, and a self-service community post office. All of those amenities that I just recited were constructed and currently exist at the peninsula. The two items that have not been completed or actually begun are the permanent clubhouse and the nature center. That period, of course, from 2004 to 2007 was a period of great growth in Sussex County. Going into 2007, there were some early signs that the economy was slowing down, and that impact was starting to be felt. Sales slowed at the peninsula and then basically stopped. And in fact, there have been no developer sales at the peninsula, none, since January of 2008. In February of 2008, in light of what was occurring, the developer filed an application with the county to modify condition number 10 in order to extend the time to construct the clubhouse and the nature center. And you will recall, not you, Mr. Ross, but we appeared before the Planning Commission with that application. We presented the request to the commission and to the county council, The condition was amended, not in the manner that we had requested, but it was amended by the County Council in December of 2008. And again, just to summarize that amendment, the council said that commencement of construction of the those facilities should begin within 2 years, and completion would need to be done within 3.5 years. And the council indicated that a performance bond would have to be posted to guarantee completion of those items. Now, at the time we appeared before you, we were starting to discuss what everybody knew, and that was that the economy had slowed down considerably. But in hindsight, no one anticipated that what we were running into was what is now referred to as the Great Recession. And that recession, of course, is by no means great, nor is it over. During 2008 and 2009, quite frankly, the real estate market, for all practical purposes, died. My client, the developer of the Peninsula, went into default on its loans. Wachovia Bank, which was the lender that had financed the purchase and construction at the Peninsula, exercised its rights under the loan documents. And something that was a little bit different here, rather than foreclosing on the loan, which quite frankly would have most likely shut the Peninsula down, the bank filed a proceeding in the Delaware Chancery Court to have a receiver appointed. And this is a specific procedure that the Court of Chancery has authority to grant, and this was a remedy that the bank had in its mortgage. So the bank basically requested a receiver to be appointed. Legal proceedings were instituted, and Vice Chancellor Noble of the Delaware Chancery Court, at the request of the bank, appointed Lantec Receiver Services, LLC, as the receiver to manage the project with the basically the mission of preserving and protecting the value of the development. And, of course, that that responsibility benefits both the bank, the creditors, as well as owners in the Peninsula. Now, Lantec itself has extensive experience in all aspects of residential development, and in particular, in managing troubled real estate assets. Lantec's, what they're doing now, they're acting under the specific authority granted by the Court of Chancery. They are required to file quarterly reports with the Court of Chancery detailing all those activities, all expenses, all income. And what they do is, again, under the supervision of the Court of Chancery. So when Lantec assumed control of the development, what they found were numerous significant problems that had arisen as a result of the developer's financial difficulties. They included the following. The project had 31 stormwater management ponds. The ponds had been constructed, but they had not been inspected by Sussex Conservation District. There were no record drawings prepared, and none of the ponds had been accepted by the district for permanent operation. And over $1.4 million in letters of credit to Sussex County had expired. Additional lines of credit had been issued to guarantee completion of certain roads and sewer infrastructure. This was in the amount of over $2.8 million. Those letters of credit had also expired. There was no active sales program going on. The builder program, the home builder program at the Peninsula had ceased. And a number of the builders down there were in financial trouble. The club, which basically operates the recreational facilities, was operating at a deficit in excess of $2 million per year. The fishing pier and the boardwalk on Indian River Bay had been damaged and was unusable as a result of a northeaster that occurred in the spring of 2009. The kayak launch area dock had been built, but it wasn't accessible. It wasn't connected to the boardwalk. There were State of Delaware subaqueous land leases. Those fees had not been paid since 2005. Sussex County was owed taxes and sewer fees of over $300,000. And of course, the clubhouse and the nature center had not been built. And again, that was still the remaining condition of approval. What Land Tech had to do at that time is prioritize these items and take action accordingly. So what they did immediately was to come in, assess what needed to be done, and then begin to do it. And what they did was, of course, by now made payment of the past due taxes and sewer fees to the county, completed the kayak launch area and provided the connection, basically took care of the matter with the Sussex Conservation District on the storm water ponds, reinstated the letters of credit, paid the subaqueous land lease fees that were due, and basically are acting on restarting the sales program and the builders program. One of the items that remains unresolved is the, of course, the issue of the clubhouse and the nature center. And I think a very important point that I can't overemphasize is that Land Tech has worked with and kept informed the peninsula owners as to everything that they've been doing and what they're trying to do since their involvement at the peninsula. And we certainly realize that the county, in considering our request, is going to put a very heavy value on what is in the best interest of the peninsula homeowners, as you should. Now, thank you for your patience in allowing me to get to the point of tonight's hearing, but I did want to give you that background. The proposed amendment which you have, I assume, in front of you, if that's been given
that's
out.
That's been passed down.
The proposed amendment basically has four sections to it, A, B, C, and D. And this has been an evolutionary process where we've adjusted it to address the concerns that have been expressed and to try to make this as clear as possible. Section A of this basically says that the recreational facilities, and it lists things, will be built within 2 years. And that's referring to what I've already told you, the items that have already been completed. And that's the language right from the original condition, so that's really not a change. B addresses the nature center, and I can make this part very simple and straight. The nature center will be completed and open by May 30th of 2011. So that's 6 months from now. So the intent is to basically have that constructed and completed over the winter and the spring of 2011. C and D is a little more complicated and needs some explanation. C and D is referring to the clubhouse. What has been done, the preliminary plans have been completed for the clubhouse. The cost of the clubhouse and the furnished cost of the clubhouse would be approximately $5 million. The facility will be architecturally attractive. The clubhouse will include a dining capacity for over 200 people with additional seating on an outdoor terrace, a full commercial kitchen, food and beverage office and coolers and freezers, flexible meeting space separate from the dining room, all the normal restrooms, coat rooms, storage areas, etc. A bar area for seating of 30 plus an outdoor terrace, golf cart storage area for 85 carts, men's and women's locker rooms, an expanded and renovated golf pro shop and pro office, office place for staff, conference room, golf bag storage room and bag drop area. It will also provide additional parking, and it will have an elevator. So that is what is planned. The financial issue is really the essence of why we're here and what this is all about. The club currently has 475 members. In some of the prior years, the club operated at a deficit of close to $3 million per year. Its lowest level of loss was $2.3 million per year in 2009. After Lantech became involved through reduction in operating costs, the club is on track to reduce the operating deficit to just over $1 million in the current year. The projections are, with the new clubhouse being constructed, and this is aside from the cost of construction, this is the cost of operation, the new clubhouse would further increase the operating deficit by an additional $1.1 million per year. And Lantech, the receiver, and the lender are anxious to eliminate club operating deficits altogether. So these additional deficits would have a direct impact on member dues and basically would come close to doubling the members' dues from the current level. Now, this is not a desirable result for the club members in that it would impose a substantial burden on them at a very difficult time, and that would be further aggravated by the fact that the raising fees would put the Peninsula sales at a competitive disadvantage and basically would price some potential purchasers out of the market, which certainly is not desirable at this time or at any time. Now, the reasons for this deficit basically goes back to an original development projection. It was projected there would be significantly more members in total, and specifically more golf members at the Peninsula. Golf members pay a higher dues at this time, and of course those numbers have not materialized as a result of the economic conditions. So that's the reality of where things are. And what Lantech basically is proposing and what we're presenting to you, and again, this is under its court-supervised responsibility to preserve and protect the value of the development. In essence, what they're trying to do is to correlate the construction of the new clubhouse with the number of members that would make the operation of the club economically viable. And after analyzing the relevant data, it was determined that the minimum number of members needed is 750, with at least 250 of those members being full golf members. Now, after further review of that, it was also determined that if the total number of members was 950, then the number of golf members would be irrelevant. So in other words, 750 members with at least 250 golf members, or 950 members, period. So if you look at paragraph C of the proposed amendment, basically what that states, it combines what I just said, and what it basically says is that the construction of the clubhouse would commence when there are 950 members or 250 full golf members, whichever occurs first. So that would be the trigger that would require the beginning of the construction. The second part of paragraph C basically provides an assurance that this facility will be built. Lantech has created an escrow account agreement for all membership deposits. Membership deposits are paid when an owner becomes a member. Since they've come in and taken over, the current balance that is in that account is $867,789. And all new initiation fees and payments would be placed into that account. In addition, Lantech was able to take control of the original developer's account of initiation fees, and $580,000 of that money will be deposited to this escrow account upon approval of the proposed amendment. Now, that will result in this escrow account having a balance of approximately $1.5 million at this time. And then as new members join, all new fees would be added to this escrow. This escrow agreement is already in existence. It's binding on LandTech and on any successor to LandTech, basically anyone who is the in the place of LandTech or the developer of the development. And it provides assurance that the club will be completed in accordance with the terms of the escrow agreement. Basically, that money will be there until this club is done and cannot be removed until the club is done and operational. The last item of the proposed amendment, Section D, which I added really just today because I thought it would come up. Basically, what it provides is that LandTech will provide a statement every 6 months to Mr. Lank, the Planning and Zoning Office, stating the current membership numbers so that the county can monitor the progress of this membership toward meeting this condition. And that, of course, would be both the general membership as well as the golf membership. As I said before, I know that a major consideration you have is the effect of this modification on the Peninsula homeowners. And again, LandTech has held meetings with the owners, and we believe our proposal is in everyone's best interest, both the bank, creditors, as well as the homeowners. And I don't represent the homeowners, and I think there are some here that are going to speak. And I certainly don't want to represent that 100% of the homeowners are basically supporting this application, although in general I've never seen anything where 100% of the people support anything. And if someone isn't, then they're going to present their reasons. But I can represent to you, as Mr. Lank has stated, there are 70 letters in support that have been sent in for the record, or emails that have been sent in for the record, from owners of homes in the peninsula supporting this application. When you consider your recommendation on this, if you have any reservations about this request, I strongly urge you to read those letters. These aren't form letters. These are letters the people wrote basically stating, you know, why they are in support of this application. In summary, as we all know clearly, the economy went into the worst decline since the Great Depression, and the responsible thing to do is to adjust your activities to deal with the new realities of the situation. And LandTech basically is trying to do that. LandTech is not the original developer. LandTech is court-appointed and comes in with the responsibility that it has, and that responsibility is to preserve and protect the value of the peninsula. As I said, LandTech is not the developer. They took over by court order. They stabilized what at that time was a very sick patient, and they're now planning to basically help that patient recover, and what we hope is to regain its health and vitality and proceed on. The proposed condition, deferring the construction of the clubhouse until the membership is sufficient to support the cost of operation, we believe is an appropriate remedy, an appropriate way to deal with the problem. And as I said, the amendment provides assurance through the escrow of funds that those funds will be available and will not be released until this is completed. And I can tell you personally, I've been involved with the peninsula since its inception. I walked on the peninsula property when it was grown in corn. I saw the vision of what it was to be, this design of a beautiful, unique community, and I basically saw that become a reality. Unfortunately, the peninsula's hit some hard times, just like everyone else. But with this modification, we believe it will survive and in time prosper. And basically, this condition will benefit the bank. It'll benefit the owners. It'll benefit the county through taxes, transfer taxes, et cetera. And it'll benefit the businesses that provide services to the residents and maintenance and construction at Peninsula Homes. I'll tell you, this request is very critical to the continued success of the operation at the Peninsula. We strongly request your support, and we'll try to answer any questions you have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fuqua. And we'll see if there are any questions, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fuqua, I need, if we can, fill in some of the blanks that I have in terms of figures, but currently, what's the current dues that are assessed to members?
Okay, let me get some help with some of these questions, okay? Chuck. Chuck, if you just introduce yourself.
Yes, good evening. I'm Chuck Munn from Columbia, South Carolina with Lantech Receiver Services.
And currently, what are the dues that are assessed to members?
There are three levels of dues. The three levels of membership are a social level, which is the lowest level, and there's a sport level, which a social level, for instance, cannot play golf. The sport level is the first level of membership that can play golf, and then there's a full golf level. To put those numbers in this perspective, the dues for a social are $150 a month. The dues for the sport level are $210 a month, and the dues for the full golf are $420 per month.
Chuck, while you're at it, why don't you explain the initiation membership too?
Corresponding initiation fees for that are $7,500 for the social level, $25,000 for the sport level, and $47,500 for the full golf. And everyone that purchases a home or a unit in the peninsula is required to be a member at one of those levels.
So everyone who's currently purchased a lot at the peninsula has paid at least the social membership of $7,500.
Yes, sir.
And if the commission and ultimately the council was not in favor of delaying the building of this clubhouse and the nature center, what would you anticipate the fees would have to rise to in order for you to sustain operations as they exist today? In other words, if we said no, you got to build it, what's it going to cost?
The dues would essentially double.
Okay. Because currently you have 475 members?
Yes, sir. And approximately 275 of those would fit into the sport level.
Okay.
And many people do that. It's a less expensive way to play golf. And for someone that might be a second homeowner that lives in Philadelphia, Washington, uses a second home, that's a way they can play golf. Roughly 100 members at the social level and roughly 100 at the full golf level. Just right.
And the feeling is right now that if you have 950 social members, the club would be self-sustaining.
Well, the 950, we know they will not all be social members. We know that they will be at some mixture of social, sport, and full golf. When we initially looked at this, and what we did was try to model a business plan of what this would make, what makes business sense to operate this facility, and to make it, be at a break-even point. So we looked at 750 members with at least 250 being the full golf. We knew that that would work. But someone, again, in our communications with our owners, someone raised the question, what if you would never get to 250 full golf? What if we get a lot of sport members and a lot of social? So we went forward and looked at an upset number of what number would be fine as an upset number, regardless of the number of full golf members. And that's how we arrived at the 950s.
And at the current level of membership that you have, given that it's been stated that you're losing about $1 million a year, $1.1 million a year, how long could the peninsula continue to operate with an ongoing deficit of this nature before you just have to pack up?
Well, the funding, as receiver, we're not the bank, as Mr. Fuqua pointed out. We're appointed as the receiver to look after the protect and preserve the property, and to not only looking at it in the bank's perspective, but the creditors and with the owners. And so we're charged with looking at it in that way. When we came in, We saw an operating deficit. The best year that the peninsula had had with respect to a club was losing $2.3 million. We worked to try to rearrange some of the services, look at maybe in the wintertime closing certain days in the facilities and just trying to operate it more efficiently. If they had 25 employees on the golf course, figure out how we could do it with 18 employees, but the type of thing that any of you would do in your own business of trying to look at costs and expenses. We came in October the 14th of 2009. Those first couple of months, we looked at budget for 2010, and we projected getting the $2.3 million down to $1.1 million. And we are on track to achieve that this year. As we move into next year, we hope it's going to be an even better number. We're going to look at, you know, other sources of revenue that we hope this economy will allow to happen. We've pretty much done most of the cuts and expenses that we can do. So we really, if you're going to look at projecting more revenues, it's hard to, you know, cut additional cost out of that. But, you know, your question is how long can it continue to go? I think the community's been blessed. I think the homeowners have been blessed. But there's been a bank, Wachovia, that actually chose to go, what I'll say, this receiver route, which we believe does a lot to preserve and protect value. I can tell you we work around the country in a number of states. We have a number of receiverships and work for a number of other banks. And in many cases, what we've seen is when a loan goes into default, and particularly one that's as large as this, in excess of $50 million in debt, there are many lenders out there that would do just what you said. Let's close it up. Let's shut it down. Let's not have any more expenses incurred. And then let's sit down and figure out what we got and what we're going to do with it. That hasn't been the position here. And we feel like that the bank, who's been supportive of our efforts here to preserve and protect and has been willing to fund, I don't care who the bank is today, they're not an endless pile of money. This is one project I have probably thousands in the portfolio of a bank like Wachovia Wells Fargo. So there are a lot of people, a lot of projects that are looking out there that are asking for cash and that are asking for funding. What we've got to show is significant improvement as each year as we're doing. So, you know, how long can it go? We're going to continue to improve to try to get this to a break even as quickly as we can. And what we don't need to do is be building additional facilities that are going to take it in the opposite direction. We believe that we weren't here and we were not a part of the, you know, the condition when a set date was added. And I'd suggest that maybe when that date was added, I don't think any of us probably knew how bad this situation financially in the country and locally was going to get from a real estate standpoint. But we firmly believe, as we look at this as a business model, that what needs to be the trigger for start of this facility, as we've discussed with the owners, and we've had great support from the owners, we've had meetings with our owners to discuss this, is we understand they want to know that the facility is going to get built. And they want to know that there is what the financial strategy is for being able to fund that. As Mr. Fuqua laid out, you know, we've set up this escrow account. We've set it up in what I'll call a fail-safe type of mechanism where it can transfer to a future owner. Because, again, we're not the owner. At some point, the bank will take title to this property. That will occur. And at some point, there'll be a new owner in here. So we're trying to set up something where you won't have to see this again. This will pass to the next owner, and you know what's going to happen. And the trigger becomes that date when it's economically viable. So I hope that answers your question. It's a little bit long-winded, and I apologize.
It's a little bit long-winded. I think I got lost somewhere in the wind, but okay. And Mr. Fuqua, has there been a vote of the owners in terms of this current proceeding, or how did you arrive at this point?
Again, I'm going to have Mr. Munn address that because he actually met with the owners.
We have one of the gentlemen who's going to speak tonight. We have one of our owners who serves on the board of directors of the Peninsula Community Association, and through some leadership on his part, we've communicated regularly with our owners either through meetings, through writings, that type of thing, and we actually met with them about this particular subject back in, I believe, August. We, as a result of that, you know, some of these conditions, just like when they raised the question, well, what if you don't get to 250 golf members? And we addressed that when we moved to the 950. So it wasn't trying to get our owners in a room and have a vote. We didn't try to do this at a homeowners meeting. But our goal has been to keep them informed about our activities, what we're doing, and then we've asked them to provide, you know, to Mr. G, who will be speaking to you later, their letters of support or not support, but just their feelings of how they feel about this. And that represents the letters that I think Mr. Lank has, and I think some more letters that will be presented to you tonight. So we did not do it specifically as a vote.
So, Mr. Lank, did we receive any letters in opposition to this?
No, we did not.
And we've received approximately 70.
70, mostly emails, but there were 70 total, some letters, mostly emails. And they came directly to my desk. And they were immediately put in the file in case anyone come in to review the file.
So that represents what? Six. Okay. How's the property currently being marketed?
When we arrived, the Discovery Center, if you've been to the peninsula, is a sales office right outside the security gate called the Discovery Center. When we arrived, it was outdated. It was open, but with some resales were occurring in it. It was not open selling developer property at all, had not since really January of 2008. During the course of this year, we've renovated that Discovery Center to make it current in light of what's actually the property looks like today. A number of photographs and drawings and plans have been added. We brought in a sales manager and a sales team, and we opened that Discovery Center on the 27th of May of this particular year. We knew that this first year in the economy we were in that it would take a while to mend some of the problems that had occurred over the past few years prior to our being here. We had heard from local brokers in the community that said they'd been owed money, they hadn't been paid, just a lot of different things like that that had occurred. So we worked hard on mending relationships with the local brokerage community. As I said, hired sales agents. We've started advertising this year. We've been advertising in newspapers, magazines, doing direct mail, doing web advertising. We wanted to start by getting building activity. So we were successful. Miller & Smith was an existing builder that had already been in the peninsula. They owned approximately 115 lots that they had not built. They had built a number of units, but they still owned about 115 lots. We met with them. They were going to agree they would get their building program back underway and on track. NV Homes, obviously one of the largest builders in the state of Delaware, they control about 55-56% between NV and Ryan of the market in the state of Delaware. We felt it was important to get them in. We had looked at some of their other product they were doing at communities such as Bayside, and we felt they would be a strong addition to the community. So we have been successful in getting them in to contract some lots and build a model home. They've just finished their model home. It was completed within the last several weeks. And so they've opened that up, and I understand they have a sale or two, as Miller & Smith has a sale or two. And we are working to sell developer lots for single-family homes. Basically, the three types of products that are currently being marketed are a single-family, townhome, and a villa product. You probably are familiar from some of the things you have seen in the local press during the past year. Another bank, PNC Bank, was involved in a condominium project in terms of funding the 18th on the Bay condominium project in Peninsula. They had taken some 23 units back and a deed in lieu of foreclosure. That was not part of the assets that we had. That was from a different bank, and they sold those at an auction this year, obviously discounted at an auction. Shell Brothers had some 20 to 25 condominium units in the windswept community that they still had ownership of, and they had an auction this year. So condominiums, which are very weak in the marketplace right now, the condominiums that were in place were sold this year through an auction process. Not by us, that was by other parties. We think what we've done with the buildings, sir, is to position the community for a strong selling season in 2011. It's taken a year to get our feet back on the ground and to get some credibility in the marketplace.
But if I was coming in to your sales center and I was interested in buying a property, what presentation would I be given about this clubhouse?
About the clubhouse today, we've You would be getting a HUD report is what you would get. It would explain the fact that the clubhouse is a future amenity, that we currently have a hearing pending with the Sussex County to ask that that be extended to the dates that we've talked about, and that if that's approved, then those would be the dates. That currently it's out of compliance today. We've had an application in since May, and the hearing has now been scheduled for November and December. They would hear exactly what the truth is.
Mr. Johnson, I'll add that, as I mentioned before, Land Tech has to give a quarterly report to the Chancery Court, and this matter is addressed in that quarterly report each time that this application had been filed, and we would be appearing before the county in November and December to make this presentation. So it's one of the issues that the court is advised of also.
So if I'm a proposed or potential home buyer, I would be told that that the clubhouse is something that's intended to be built. It's not scheduled to be built at this time, and that if it has to be built, my dues would go up.
If it had to be built now, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And you would be completely briefed on the fact that the project is in receivership, that there's a receiver. Our HUD statement, we actually amended the HUD statement so that anybody that's looking at the HUD statement is told that as of October 14th, 2009, there is a receiver, and oftentimes we have to explain to people what a receiver is and how that process works.
And again, just to revisit the numbers, currently there's about 475 members.
Yes, sir.
Of those 475 members, how many are actually homes or condos that have been built? In other words, if someone comes in and buys a lot, are they one of the 475 members?
Yes. And they do pay dues.
They do pay.
Yes.
Right. They pay dues whether they have anything built on that lot or not.
Yes.
But actually, how many homes have been built?
I have a number off the top of your head.
377
condos. The rest are, there was one. Three. Very roughly about 300.
About 300. Okay.
It's looking at condominiums, townhomes, villas, and single family homes.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any questions at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Burton.
Just a couple to follow up on Mr. Johnson's questions. In your business model that you have, that you're either trying to get to 950 or 250, when do you think you'll get there? You got to have some kind of date on when you think you're going to build the clubhouse.
We do. We feel like we are poised for a good sales year next year. There are some signs that things are getting better out there. To tell you, we have produced through our marketing efforts this year about 1,000 new leads in 5 months. So there's a lot of interest in coming. Those are qualified leads that are interested in coming to Sussex County, interested in coming to the peninsula. And the one thing we have found in our marketing efforts, we market single-family permanent residences in some of our projects, and other places we market and sell the resort second home type of community, which is more in line with what the peninsula is. That's a tougher segment these days. It's been harder hit by the recession because it's not a must-buy. And we have found that typically when we generate a lead, so a prospect that is interested, it's often the third or fourth visit to the community before someone makes a purchase decision. They don't just come in and say, looks great, I want to buy today. So we are in that process now where that can take a number of months to work through people. The fact we've generated those leads this year, we have typically every weekend right now people coming back making a first, second, or a third visit, and hence some of the sales that our builders have been making. The other thing is that people want finished product. They're not really looking to purchase a lot and go out and build a house as much today as they really like to have something that's built. So we think that based on our projections that probably that's about a 3-year period of sales.
Okay.
And if things were really good, it could be 2.5. If they were not so good, it could be 3.5 or 4.
And if the golf membership, if that option increased, that could be sooner.
And the it is not open to anybody that isn't a owner? Is that what you
membership is limited to owners?
To ownership. So you're not going to go outside the market to try and get outside of the of the peninsula to try and get the 950 memberships, to get the 900 members?
We have a few limited programs that we're doing outside to try to generate some golf play right now to help with the deficits. But at this point, we've not gone outside for memberships at this point.
Is there any plan to do that?
At this point, no. We've talked about it, but we feel like you're talking about a higher-priced piece of real estate at the peninsula. And if you're going to be marketing a higher-priced real estate, there's some level of, exclusivity to the course and the privateness that we think is important to being able to market at the prices that, protect and preserve the value, quite honestly.
You were appointed by the court. Is there a time limit for you?
Yes, sir. Let me explain how that works. On October the 14th of 2009, we were initially appointed for a three-month period. The judge said, let's try this for 3 months. Let's see how it looks. We were asked to come, so we had to go back to the court. The bank's attorneys had to go back in January and ask that we be appointed for additional term. The judge at that point said, okay, well, let's try this one for a year. So that would expire in January coming up of 2011. There's a request out there now from the bank's attorney for a hearing to ask for an extension for another year or longer if they wish. But up here, what the Chancery Court judge has been doing is said, we'll try this for a year. Let's look at it a year at a time.
So essentially, you're on contract for another 2 months.
Yes, sir, with a request out there or a request for a hearing to extend it for a year. We serve at the pleasure of the court.
Okay. You have $867,580. Does any of that money include building the Nature Center?
Yes, sir. Not of that number. The 867 is monies that we've received and been able to, since we've been there, monies that were specific initiation fees for the club. We located from the prior developer, we were able to take control of another account that had $780,000 in it. That particular account was an operating account. It was not an escrow account. It was not an initiation fee escrow account, but it was an account that we were able, as the receiver, as we go in and take control of the property, that we were able to take control of. Of those monies, what we're proposing with those monies, we've kept those monies aside, is that we would take $200,000 of that, which part of the Nature Center is already built. The docks are in, the boardwalks are in, all of those are in. The Nature Facility is an outdoor deck and screen porch facility with kayak storage. That's what the Nature Center is. And we're estimating that's going to take about $200,000. So of $780,000, we're setting aside $200,000 to build that facility. That leaves the $580,000 you referred to. So the 580 and the 867, or whatever the number is, represent the two sums that together would put about $1.4 million, $1.5 million in this account at the end of the year. Okay. We further estimate that at the point that the 750, 250 is reached, or the 950, whichever occurs first, the amount of funds that would be in the escrow account, exclusive of any interest, just of the funds that have been deposited, would be approximately $6.5 million. That's looking at a mix of memberships very similar to the percentages that are there today, and we're doing what we can to try to promote people to don't join at a social membership, join at a sport level, or don't join it. We're trying to find ways to get folks to upgrade their membership. But if we look at just the mix that's there today, about $6.5 million when one of those two levels is reached, which is more than sufficient to build a clubhouse.
Okay, but this, so you're setting this up so that it, no matter what happens to you, the membership money would fall into this account and it would keep moving regardless of land tax.
It is, yes, sir. Okay. And the escrow agent, Mr. Henson, who's with us tonight, is an attorney that works with us. He's established this escrow account, and he's the escrow agent for that account. And so if someone else came in and wanted to, we'll just take Mr. Henson out. We want to just stick our fella in over here. He can only be changed by the Chancery Court of Delaware. Is that correct, Tom?
Yes.
The court would have to change that. So that's what we're trying to do.
And part of this amended condition is to amend the timeline on the Nature Center as well, correct?
Yes.
They were both 2 years.
Right, and we would go ahead and get the Nature Center built over this winter, so it is open for business in May of 2011.
Okay. Was there ever talk of the amount of square footage that the clubhouse would be?
We've seen a number of plans since we have been here. The zoning with Sussex County did not contain any reference to the size or the amount of square footage of the permanent clubhouse. It's not part of the plan that was presented or approved. We've seen a number of different plans.
Do you have a plan with the square footage?
The plan that we are currently looking at is about 18,000 square feet. We've seen plans that were as big as 30 or 32,000 square feet. The bigger they are, the more they cost to operate. One of the things we're seeing as far as trends in the industry right now is it's nice to talk about 32,000 square foot clubhouses, but most people that are paying dues to operate them don't need that and don't want that.
Are you advertising a certain model? I mean, are you saying this is what we're going to build?
No, sir.
So it's just the word clubhouse is just kind of
talking more about the facilities and uses. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people would have a clubhouse and say, well, let's have a workout area. Let's have a fitness facility inside of our clubhouse. We already have that today. We have a fitness facility that would make Gold's Gym proud. So many of the uses that you might normally find in a clubhouse, the massage rooms, those type of things, the spas, we already have those today. So many of the functions that you would typically see in a clubhouse are already built and operating at the Peninsula.
Was there an actual notice that went out to all the homeowners, all the whatever your number was?
I'll have to ask Mr. Lang.
I mean, was there an official notice that went
out?
Oh,
you mean
for this change? Well,
we did.
Everybody that owns or
we held a meeting. We held a meeting, I think it was back in August, where we invited them to come to a meeting. We talked about this.
But you sent them a notice that said,
yes, sir,
this is what we're going
to
change.
And once we knew the dates to this, we've sent those notices out.
No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Mr. Ross?
Mr. Fuqua, you mentioned, I think, in your presentation something about a bond. Was that a performance bond, and what happened to that, or what was the bond?
On the original amendment to the condition in 2008, the modification of the condition stated that construction had to start within 2 years, and there had to be a performance bond posted. The construction did not start, and a bond has not been posted. And the problem, quite frankly, with the bond is that to get a bond now, you basically have to put up the amount of the bond to get a bond. So it really is just prohibitive.
The escrow deposits, are they secured? How are they secured or insured? How are those investments known so they won't evaporate in some?
It's time to come up and talk to the escrow, if you would.
If you can just identify yourself.
My name is Tom Henson from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm an attorney in Charlotte. I have them in an escrow account. They were in a single account. One of the homeowners expressed an interest at the homeowners meeting in August, worried about FDIC insurance, but they also wanted them to be held in interest-bearing account. You may know that there was some recent movement by the FDIC. If it was a non-interest-bearing account, the FDIC insurance was unlimited. They ended that program back during the summer. So I have the money in what's known as in one institution, but it's in a Cedars account that extends the FDIC insurance for the entire amount of the account. And the interest rate that we get is 10 basis points less, one-tenth of 1% less than we would get if we did not have the FDIC insurance.
And then in the case of foreclosure or whatever, your company gets sent on its way, the court says, or the bank says, this is done, what happens to that escrow money?
It stays there until the conditions under which it can be released from escrow are met, which are the building of the clubhouse or replacement with a bond.
But it doesn't go to the bank in the shortage of the note or the loan?
No, sir. It is not security for the bank debt at all.
Okay. And then, Mr. Robertson, I guess my question is for you. If we get semi-annual reports and the report comes back that they've reached these goals but the money somehow has been absconded with, what's our role in the county? What do we do with that report?
Well, if the report comes back that they've reached these goals and it's not been built, we could certainly seek enforcement of the ordinance, assuming that this was approved. And the way you do that is in the Court of Chancery, but actually that sort of brings up a point that we've mulled around a little bit after reading the court order that established the receivership. Right now, you could say that they're in violation of the current ordinance, but there's a receivership order that sort of governs how this project moves forward. And I don't know that without petitioning the court through that receivership to require the receiver to expend the money to build the clubhouse, I don't know that at this point the county has any recourse short of a court order from the Court of Chancery, because that court order basically puts caps and limits on what can be expended without further order of the court. So to some extent, we're all at the mercy of the Court of Chancery a little bit at this point.
That's what, the reason I bring it up is I appreciate the gesture. I just don't know, we get the reports and somebody has to handle it. What do we do with it, regardless of which side of the fence it's on? So, I'm just not so sure that it should be a requirement of the motion. That's all my questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Mr. Lank, any questions?
Could you give a little description of the changes of where the original clubhouse is intended to go versus the way it's intended to go today, since we are discussing the clubhouse?
Well, again, going back to our owners, this clubhouse we're talking about is we're proposing to be built several years from today. When we first came in with our background in resort development and looked at the facility, the proposed clubhouse was, if you will, detached from the existing facilities, back up maybe 100 yards or so. And as we looked at that, we felt like that, our initial feeling was that maybe that's not the best situation. If you were in the health club and maybe it had an indoor swim and you wanted to maybe go over and have dinner at the clubhouse and you had a snow or rain or something like that, we liked the idea of having the facilities attached where you could walk from one facility to the other and stay dry and not have to go out in the weather. And while we still think that that has some merit, and the site plan, because you had requested, we wanted to give you a site plan based on that, we had a facility that more attached to the existing, and it met those requirements of being covered, and that's what you have in front of you. We have, in our meetings with the owners, we have had a number speak to us about that while they understood that, and that was a nice thought about staying out of the weather and having them all connected, they really did like the location where it had been previously proposed, which was a little more up on a hill, had a view out, part of it had a view out over the Indian River Bay, as the one that, after we moved it, would still look at it, the Indian River Bay as well. Our feeling is this, the people who are going to enjoy this clubhouse down the road, it's not us, it's going to be the owners of the community. And our thought would be that as we finalize construction drawings and everything else, that that is something that I think the advisory board for the community club advisory board, which is 7 or 8 members that are owners in the community, that we want to allow them the input into that. And I'm not in my mind, Mary, that it has to be exactly here or it has to be exactly there. I'm more concerned that the uses be there and that it be in a place that the community and the owners think is the right place. So I think a little bit of that is to let the market drive it a little bit. I think if it sits here versus 30 yards over here, I don't think any of us, that 30 yards is the difference. It just needs to be a facility that functions well, that flows well, and has the right uses in it.
Another question in relationship to the typical clubhouse, and since this is a golf facility, is the majority, or not the majority, of the amenities that relate to a clubhouse already existing other than the large dining facility and kitchens?
They are, sir. The main, if you think about the things that we've heard the most are that, while we have a terrace grill, the terrace grill sort of doubles as a meeting room, as a restaurant, as a bar, as a snack facility, as a lunch place. It's serving a lot of functions. And so what we have heard is that, people would be excited to have a place where they had a lounge, had a bar, where they could go sit down after a round of golf and enjoy something to drink, maybe have some casual bar-type food in there, and that, you know, that the facility that we have, when you have larger events and it's a time of year when a lot of homeowners are down, it's just not large enough for a Mother's Day lunch or Easter brunch, that type of thing. So, yes, I think the food and beverage in terms of a larger restaurant and a bar seem to be the main things. But most of the other uses that you would see in a clubhouse are there. We don't have bag storage today. We have the carts are stored in a temporary facility, which I think you've seen out there, but they are, you know, inside of a building. When the clubhouse is built, the idea is that the clubhouse is built elevated so that the carts are underneath. And the temporary building, which is, you know, not the most attractive building in the world, it serves a purpose right now, it would go away and provide an area for more parking.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Mr. Robertson?
Just a couple things. One, just for the sake of confirmation, on behalf of the engineering department and I guess planning and zoning as well, I just wanted to confirm some of the statements that Mr. Fuqua made about this process. You know, the commission often hears rhetoric about what's been done over the time. In this case, when the receivership was established, Mr. Munn did come meet with the folks at County Engineering, Assessment and Planning and Zoning. I think it's a safe description to say that he was somewhat in the weeds back in October of 2009 trying to get a handle on what was going on, because there were a lot of taxes that weren't paid. I think there were even some sewer fees, and there certainly were a lot of bonds that the county was very concerned about and looking at, you know, withholding building permits and basically bringing the project to a halt from the county's point of view. And the representations that Mr. Fuqua stated about getting those taxes paid, sort of prioritizing what needed to be done first, did occur. I just want to reference that from the point of view of what's happened from the county side. A couple questions I have. Just for the record, define what a member is, because is that a single person or a family? I mean, you know, I just want to make clear that when it says 950 members, if that's what the county's considering, what that means.
A membership is what an individual lot or a condominium or a home holds a membership into the club. And, you know, that membership, it could be a husband and wife, it could be an individual person, it could be a family.
So it's more of a unit than a person.
Yeah.
And I want to follow up a little bit on the questions Mr. Ross had. You know, when he asked about the escrow agreement, the prior ordinance required a bond, and most developments required a bond. And the county is the primary beneficiary of that bond. So in other words, if construction comes to a halt, the county, on behalf of itself and, you know, third-party owners in the development, can immediately go to a bank or a bonding agency, call that bond, use those funds to complete the project. And it's not often a position that the county wants to place itself in, you know, to take over construction. However, and the way I understand what you've described is the county's not a beneficiary at all to the escrow agreement. You know, as Mr. Smith was alluding to, or excuse me, Mr. Ross was alluding to, you know, we've got an obligation here, but we don't have any security to make sure that obligation is complete. If you could elaborate on why the county should be assured by the escrow agreement that you've proposed, because we don't have anywhere to go to say, all right, we're going to take this money to complete this clubhouse. And I haven't really heard clearly how a member or a homeowners association would be able to go and access that money to complete the clubhouse.
If the escrow agreement, this is Tom Henson, if the escrow agreement terminates, the money goes back to the persons who have put the money into escrow. It goes back to the people who have placed the money in escrow.
Right, but what happens if, in the scenario that Mr. Ross described, we've got 1,000 members and we've got an escrow agreement? I mean, so what you're saying is that the money then just goes back to whoever contributed, and we still don't have a clubhouse, and then we're in the same position we're in now without any security.
Well, yes, sir. I mean, that is theoretically possible, but why would there be a reason to do that unless the members there just revolted and said, we don't want a clubhouse. We insist that there not be a clubhouse.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a possibility, but we could also be right where we are now, or the developer, which may not be in the responsible charge of Mr. Munn, says, I don't want to build it. You know, I mean, we're looking at something in the future, and the three of you may not even be involved in it anymore.
Well, I think on any development of this nature, I mean, any residential development, I mean, you potentially have the same situation. If rec facilities aren't built, then they're in violation of the conditions of the RPC or the conditional use or whatever. And the county wouldn't normally go in and build the facilities. The county would say, we're not issuing any more COs, we're not issuing any more building permits.
Well, we've had to look at whether, stop building permits if there's not a bond or letter of credit. That's certainly been one scenario, and we've had to go call bonds or look at calling bonds if things aren't getting built, because we've got, 60% of the place built without, it's not usually a golf course clubhouse, it's oftentimes a pool house or something on a much smaller scale. We've got some security that's going to expire, and we've got to act on it. And I guess I'm just looking for the proposal that you all have made. There's security, but it doesn't run to the benefit of the county, as I'm understanding it. I just want to make sure that we're not going to be sitting here 4 years from now having the same discussion on an unsecured condition.
I mean, Tom Henson, the only thing I can tell you about that, the money is in escrow. It can't go anyplace. I mean, the only way that this doesn't get built is that if the number of memberships does not get sold, or, again, if, heaven forbid, the memberships were to decide we don't want a clubhouse.
So
then not everyone who is a member of the club would get money back then. It would go back to the escrow agreement provides, it goes back to the people who put the money into escrow up to that date.
So the money that's being placed in escrow, and I apologize, maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but that's not tied, though, to funding the construction of the clubhouse, or is it?
Yes, it is. It can't come out of escrow unless the clubhouse is built or a bond is put or a letter of credit is put in place specifically to build the clubhouse. If there is a failure of condition, I mean, if a hurricane comes through and destroys the place, and it becomes impossible to build a clubhouse, then the money goes back to the people who put it into escrow.
Okay.
And I think that's really where the crux of the problem is, in that the conditional use is not something that just impacts the applicant. The conditional use is part of a public hearing process that's a part of our comprehensive plan, part of neighboring input to property owners. It's all a process. So it's not just a matter of, the bank forecloses and we give the money back to the owners, and then the conditions of the conditional use can be just abandoned. They can't. It was given under a conditional use, under a process, a due process that included more than just the applicant. It's bigger than the applicant. So the problem is that if worst case scenario happens, the question is it appropriate to just give the money back to the applicant and not worry about the terms of the conditional use? Maybe the applicant should be required to come back through the process and say, here's our situation. We request to have this money done and change the conditional use so we don't build the applicant, but just take it for granted that doesn't have to occur is being disrespectful of process. And that's where I was going to. Number one, I don't want the bank absconding with the money and the people not be able to do it. And number two, I don't think it's proper, as Mr. Robertson is pointing out eloquently, that, the money just simply goes back and people can say, okay, forget the conditional use, because that's disrespectful of our process.
But it wouldn't be the end of the conditional use. The condition's still there. The developer of this project still has that obligation to build it. We're talking about a hypothetical here that...
But the money shouldn't just be dispersed, and it may not be just a hypothetical.
I know, but we're talking about a hypothetical that's way out there.
Not necessarily. But you may not reach that threshold and not have the money, and at some point somebody says, well, we haven't reached the threshold, we still have a pile of money in there, give me my money back, this thing is never going to be built. But and maybe that would be the correct answer, but not without following due process.
Obviously the process has to be followed. There's no option.
We'll have to noodle through this, I don't think it's appropriate to just assume that money could automatically be distributed if we didn't reach the threshold, or if the threshold was reached and something else happened.
Well, let me go back to the bigger picture. The first part of this was to try to determine the feasibility of when the dues would support this and to come up with a time for construction. The second part was to try to find some assurance that it would be built, and that was the attempt to provide that assurance, which, again, is better than no assurance.
I think you've done very well in that regard.
It's what we came up with.
This minutia, yes, that, we don't want to get hung up down the road with,
right,
something that seemingly is minor but could be much more significant than that.
I guess to sum it up, and maybe I'm missing the explanation, but we get to I mean, because we've already seen this scenario 2 years out and it wasn't built. I mean, that's the same scenario as 950 out and it's not built. I mean, you're talking years or members. So, I mean, I don't know that it's that far-fetched. You know, where I'm coming from is if it's 951 or 1,000 members, does somebody, the homeowners association, or maybe the members collectively of the club, do they have the ability to take that money and apply it to the construction costs of that club? I mean, do the members, is that escrow agreement, is that security for the completion? Is it a performance bond in the form of an escrow agreement for the completion of that club?
Yes. Yes.
The difference being that instead of running to the benefit of the county, it's running to the benefit of, at that point, 951 members, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes, that is correct.
Is the escrow agreement, is that in any way drawn into that Court of Chancery receivership order? Has that been included in that or referenced in any way in that order? Do we know?
In the order, no, because the original order was entered before we knew anything about
it.
I
just didn't know if there's any amendments to that. Okay.
It does show up in the court reports.
In the
accounting,
probably.
So in our accounting to the court of what we do, that would be showing up as one of our activities and something that had taken place.
Is there a reason why the escrow agreement is submitted as part of the record? I mean, you know, it seems like we're looking to do away with the bond and replace it with an escrow agreement. Yet we haven't seen that. There's been a lot of talk about it. We haven't seen the escrow agreement. I'm just wondering if there's any reason why that couldn't be submitted as part of the record.
We'd be happy to give it to you.
We can submit.
Happy. Can I have it to you tomorrow?
Okay.
Should we just send it to you?
Well, we'll have to wait and see if the commission decides to hold the record open for it. It's just something I happen to think of based on all the discussion.
We can submit it for the council, right?
Yeah, absolutely, you can. Yeah. That's all the questions I have, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question while we're talking about escrows.
Okay. Mr. Johnson?
The initiation fee, the $25,000 for sports, does that go into the escrow, or where does that go?
Those initiation fees are what goes into the escrow account.
So by my rough multiplication, I came up with a escrow account of $12,375,000. Is that close to that, or?
No, and I'm going to let Mr. Henson address that.
In the original escrow agreement, the original documents allowed the developer to substitute a corporate guarantee for the money that was actually in escrow. And the original developer did that in 2006.
And what does that mean in English? Is there $12 million out there somewhere? Is there a guarantee for $12 million? Or are you holding on $50 in the escrow account? What's in the escrow account now?
The numbers that Mr. Munn gave you earlier.
$867,000 and change, which you've got in $867,789 as of November the 9th.
So then about $11,500,000 is being guaranteed by somebody else?
The money, as we understand it, the money that was collected in initiation fees were to have gone into an escrow account. That escrow account could, by agreement, be replaced with something else.
By agreement with who?
Between the people who put the money into the escrow account, the people who paid the initiation fees, and the developer. They agreed that it could be replaced. So the money could come out of escrow and be replaced with something else. One of the something else's that it could be replaced by was a guarantee, a promise to pay.
By whom?
It came out from L.M. Sandler and Sons.
They were part of the original developers.
So what's happened to that guarantee?
It's still there. L.M. Sandler and Sons.
They're on the hook for that.
We are led to believe that they are bankrupt.
So it's gone.
That's what we are led to believe.
Okay. So what should have been $12 million in escrow is actually $867,000.
Correct. With we do have the other account, which was not an escrow account.
Right, that was another
580. Yes,
that was another source of funds.
Correct.
That wasn't escrow.
But everything since we've come on the scene, everything that we've gotten in terms of initiation fees is held into an escrow account.
Right. Since you've come on board.
And the new escrow account, which Mr. Henson put together, eliminated this corporate guarantee ability of a future developer coming in here, for instance, and doing exactly what this developer did. Here's a corporate guarantee and it's a lot of value today. You don't know if it's going to have any value tomorrow. So that was removed from the escrow agreement we put together in an effort, again, I think, as you had asked, to try to make sure that this is something that will survive us. Because I can't sit up here and tell any of you exactly how long we'll be here. I think you said it correctly. We know we're here for two more months. We believe that the court will like what they've seen and will approve this for another year. But I can't make that as a representation to anybody. So we're trying to put something in place that's going to last for long term for the owners that are at the peninsula, and it's going to work for them financially.
And stepping aside from the escrow account and the initiation fees, the monthly dues, that's just covering the current, or it's going towards the current cost of operations.
Going toward them, not covering them right now, but certainly going toward them, yes, sir.
Cost of operations of what? Because we don't have a clubhouse.
Health club, the golf course.
All the other amenities.
All the other amenities.
Okay,
restaurant.
So those dues are not just tied in with the clubhouse and that. We're talking about the
swimming pools, fitness
swimming
center.
Pool. So the social membership of $150 a month is covering
the social
the
members
pool
can
and
use
the
wave
stuff.
Pool, the indoor pool, the outdoor pool. There's an aerial photograph over here just to give you sort of a representation.
Right,
you can see the buildings
well,
and all of those facilities.
All the other facilities. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could have one more question just for the record. It touches on something that Mr. Munn said, just to clarify. And Mr. Fuqua, Mr. Munn, whoever, the current receivership order, does it give the Sandler companies or those individuals the ability at all to access funds or interact or have any control or authority over the operation of the peninsula at all, anything having to do with the development of it?
This is Tom Henson. No, they are totally removed.
Okay. And that's established by the Court of Chancery?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Abbott?
No, sir.
All right. Well, Mr. Fuqua, if you and the gentleman from South Carolina will take a seat nearby, we'll see what the members of the public have as an interest.
So.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone here this evening that would like to speak in favor of this application, change of zone number 1697? Land Tech Receiver Services, modify condition number 10. All right, sir. You'll state your name, sir, and address, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. And you can hear me at my height, I assume.
Yes, sir. Yeah. When that red light's on.
You can drop that. The mic will drop down more to your level, sir.
Do I need to do that?
No,
I can speak.
Mr. Fuqua can do it for you.
My name is John G. I reside in the peninsula at 27185 Barefoot Boulevard. That's in Millsboro. I also am the owner of a second property in the same development, so I'm the owner of two properties, so I represent two of the 475 people that you've witnessed. I would also add, just to make sure I don't forget anything as I've jotted it down, I had was elected and subsequently approved by Land Tech as the single homeowner board member to the Master Homeowners Association. I serve on the board of the Troon Management Group that actually runs the golf course, along with all the other properties as well. I'm on the board of one of the homeowners associations in which I live, and I serve ex officio on the other three homeowners associations present. So I, in the aggregate, with the exception of the single family homes, I am in some point representing directly and indirectly all the homeowners of the peninsula. I have with me 57 letters.
If I might ask, you're stating your position that you are representing here tonight, the position of those homeowners.
I would state to you that I represent what I believe to be their interest based on my interaction with them.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. And I think it should be clear that at the same time with your question that I in no form could represent them directly, but my intention is to express what I believe to be their wishes.
Wonderful.
I have letters, 57 of them, from homeowners and the affirmative to this action. There may be some duplication to the 70 that Mr. Lank has already spoken to. I also am aware that there are at least 20 homeowners that intend to speak to the amendment in the affirmative before council. Now, I'm not sure that that figure is exactly 20, but somewhere to that. And so they did not want to represent by letter, but rather in person at that time. There are two or three points I'd like to make to you. I think I've tried to set and gather what you've asked in the hopes that maybe I could give some clarification as a homeowner. and as a member of these different boards. One is, the reason that I undertook to actually join this board to start with, because as a homeowner and two homeowners, wasn't sure that I believed any of the proceedings were correct. That is, that we had a valid receiver that would do the job for us and we would be represented appropriately. That was not expressed to Lantic at the time, but the answer I would give you to that after the months I've spent with them, as I find them, and in my capacity in the past, I've run a bank, I'm a financial services person of 37 years, I'm familiar with these type of proceedings. So what I found in the last 6 months is these people have been, without exception, serving in the best interest of the homeowners. I've not seen one example where they've not increased the value and righted all the wrongs that none of us had any idea, and you've heard most of those tonight, they have been done. So to lay witness to what the claim that they've given you, I would say is totally in the affirmative. Secondly, we have, you've expressed some concern about the Nature Center as the first step in the process of healing. While it hasn't been built yet, what we have done is the parking lot has been established. There's been a re-leveling of all the walkways to it. There's been plumbing so that the plumbing could be put in, so it's been plumbed out, and the only thing that's left to be done is actually to raise the structure that will be put in place. So there's been movement toward that in anticipation of approval of this commission. Third, the question was asked about what we were doing to try to increase revenues and therein rein in the expenses. They already had been talked that we had a deficit of $2.3 million in 2009. That's somewhere close to $1 million anticipated for this year. Our hope and anticipation is to be at a break-even status next year. Some of that's because of outside golf that we intend to encourage through some sponsorships and contracts that we're about to sign. Also, we had a vision of how to increase revenue, so we are involved as homeowners in all those processes with the help of Troon, which manages the facilities, as well as Lantic. I might add that you've asked some questions, in particular you, Mr. Johnson, about the makeup of the membership and how we arrive at figures at 750 and 950. Some of that has been supplied by Troon, which has a national basis of these type of developments, and so they can arrive at an aggregate figure that says a percentage will join at these different levels. So using their national average, we've been able to back into a number that would say at these levels we should be able to attain a revenue source that would responsibly give us an opportunity to build the clubhouse. So, and we feel that they've been tested true, and we've been through the figures with them and with the bankers. I should also add that I've had an opportunity on at least three occasions to meet with the bankers. I haven't been one myself for a number of years. I would tell you that I find that their intention is pure. They've been very positive toward the development. They have a portfolio of properties that they have under their supervision, not unlike our own, and they rate our property at the highest level of their portfolio, by their own words. I think that their intent, likewise, is to see this community continue. They see that, with the exception now of the clubhouse, everything else is functioning and has been built out. The last thing I would tell you is that the financial condition of the community is being watched daily by a number of the homeowners, as you would suspect. There are almost 100 full-time members. They're all actively involved in what takes place in that community, so it's nothing being done on a secondary or tertiary manner. We're all involved. So we intend to stay involved, and we are, with no exception that I am aware of in my conversations in these committees, personally, have I seen anyone take a negative stance toward what's before you tonight. If you'd like to ask me any questions, I'm certainly willing and would enjoy those questions.
We thank you for your response and your input. Anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this application?
Good evening. My name is Charles Schmelzer. I'm a resident of the Peninsula, 27193 Barefoot Boulevard in Millsboro. Many of my friends who are not here tonight are retired, as I am. We've been hurt financially over the last few years. I am a retired dentist. I'm not licensed in Delaware, so I can't go back to work. And if this clubhouse would be built now with the doubling of the dues, it would put an extreme financial burden on those of us who are retired. plus the fact there's a limited amount of full-time residents. And to walk into a facility in the winter when a lot of the people who use the facility as a second home, to walk in into a 3,000-square-foot restaurant in the middle of the week with one or two tables occupied, that's not a pleasant dining experience. So I think until the membership and the amount of ownership is increased, to construct the clubhouse now would be foolish and a waste of finances until there is an appreciable increase in membership of the community. Everyone who I've spoken to loves the community. We enjoy it to the utmost extent. And we hope that the board considers the amendment put forth and ratifies it for the extension. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone present that would like to speak in opposition to change of zone 1697?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, Richard Abbott, attorney here in Delaware. I represent Dennis and Carolyn Silicato, who are residents of the peninsula at 27539 Medallion Avenue, Millsboro, Delaware. I'm from Newcastle County. It always amazes me. Sussex County is smaller, but you always need 5 digits on the street addresses. We usually get away with 2 or 3 up in Newcastle County. But
we're a big county.
You brought your passport with you, did you, tonight?
Long roads, I suppose. If I could, I have an outline here. If I could hand that to Mr. Lank, he could hand copies down the line to the members of the commission. Thank you, Mr. Lank.
Thank you, sir.
Remember, the benefit of folks in the audience, the way the rules are set up, is that that 10-day rule applies to applicants, so that anybody in the public would have an opportunity to see what the applicant has submitted. It doesn't apply to folks that are speaking from the public.
Thank you, Mr. Robertson. I wouldn't want to violate Robertson's rules of order. I wanted to just start out with a chronology. I think Mr. Fuquay did a very good job of outlining how this has transpired at the peninsula, in particular regarding condition number 10. I guess I just want to give you maybe a slightly different, shorter perspective on that chronology. And point number one would be that the best we can tell, sometime in late 2003, first building permits were issued. So under the original condition, the clubhouse construction was supposed to commence by the end of 2005, so about 5 years ago. Now, for whatever reason, the developer just sort of, I guess, put his or her head in the sand and decided they weren't going to do anything and maybe nobody would notice. So 2006 went by, nothing happened. 2007 hit, and in November of 2007, Sussex County wrote a letter to the developer and said, you got to build the clubhouse as well as the nature center. But I think we're really only here tonight on the clubhouse because it sounds like the nature center is going to be built soon regardless. So then the developer dragged their feet a while into 2008. Finally, into probably middle of 2008, filed an application, which those members who were on the commission 2 years ago heard. I know Mr. Johnson was there. I've seen his comments. He's the one that made the motion to approve the ultimate modified version of the amendment or the extension. So they came in, Sussex County Council approved that in December of 2008. So then the new deadline, of course, was about a month from now, a little 3 weeks from now, was when they were supposed to commence construction. Now, you've heard about the developer. The motion for the appointment of a receiver was filed August 14, 2009 in the Court of Chancery. So these things tend to follow through. They were in default to the tune of, I think it's, from what I can calculate, about $58 million to Wachovia Bank, which is now Wells Fargo Bank, one of the world's largest financial institutions. And so it's been about 15 months since they started to be able to get a handle on things. It's been over a year since they were aware of what needed to be done. One of the first things that they were made aware of is that in April of 2009, there was supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood, I guess, $5 million letter of credit filed with Sussex County. Well, that wasn't done by the developer. The receiver was aware of that. They're coming before you here tonight over a year later asking for more time, but they never did what they were supposed to do in the first place. So they're asking you for forgiveness, and they're asking you for more permission at the same time. They were also supposed to file certain site plans, which never happened as well. So far, coming up to tonight, I guess the point is we have about 5 years of both the developer as well as the receiver not really taking care of business as it applies to condition number 10. They may have taken care of business regarding other issues, and that's great, but condition 10 is on that list, and they've essentially ignored it, and what they've done in effect is manufactured a crisis. They're now coming before you with a crisis saying, look, we can't get this thing started in 3 weeks, so give us more time. I guess my point of all that is to say I don't think there should be any great sympathy based on the timing, because they could have and should have done something a lot sooner than now. They shouldn't have waited this long. Now, the other point, and I think this is probably the most important point I'll make, if you approve the proposed amendment to the condition, it is conceivable, and in fact, I'd say maybe even probable, that the clubhouse will never, ever be built. Never. Why? Well, everybody that buys a unit currently in the peninsula is required, mandated, to become at least a social member in the club. So it was originally supposed to be 750. Now I hear tonight they want to go take it all the way up to 950. But unless they change the covenants that are recorded with Sussex County Recorder of Deeds, there's no question that eventually when they sell 950 units, there will be 950 members, because it mandates that you do. Of course, I don't know, I believe, because I'm not sure that Sussex County is a beneficiary of these covenants, I believe these covenants could simply be amended, and that restriction or that requirement could be modified by the whoever ultimately becomes the owner of this property, or possibly even by Wells Fargo pursuant to court order. So, first of all, I'm not suggesting they're going to do that, but theoretically they could, and they could say, okay, you don't have to become a member of the club anymore. Well, in that case, they may never get to 950 members. But they probably will. I'll concede that. However, the catch is it's 950 and 250 full golf members.
It's either or.
Okay, well, I don't know, because all I know is the ordinance that was submitted. I don't know what everybody changed here at the last minute without any public notice. So I can't speak to that. I guess they've changed it. That has me off guard. I'll say for the record, I think it's wrong that people can change their proposals at the last second so that people who object to something can't be properly prepared to present their points. But I'll tell you, I don't know what it says now, so I really can't speak to it. I'm sorry, because it's been changed at the last minute. But the way it did read, it said 250 golf members. They are not mandated to accept 250 golf members. They could get to 249 and say, we stop. And if they perpetually remain at no more than 249 golf members, they never have to build the clubhouse, ever. That's a problem. I think Mr. Johnson knows better than anybody else, because he was the one that made the motion 2 years ago, but I think that's why he said, and according to the minutes of that meeting, we need to have a term of years. We shouldn't have a membership threshold number. I think that was a wise decision, that it should be a set time so that it can be easily enforced. The finagling that can go on with a membership number, again, we could be here all night coming up with all the theories on how that could happen. But I guess boiling it down, the objections are that hundreds of homeowners who have purchased in this community have relied on representations that there would be a golf clubhouse or a clubhouse. And just to give you an example, these marketing materials that were given out to my client in spring of 2006, lots of nice golfy things, glossy brochures, Jack Nicklaus, the whole nine yards, The paperwork here specifically says the construction of the club facilities will be completed in phases. The golf course and golf practices facilities, et cetera, et cetera. Construction of the clubhouse will commence no later than when the club has initially issued a combination of 350 golf, sports, and social memberships. So when my client bought, the number was, at least in the marketing materials, 350. Now, that was exceeded in, I think, 2007. So, again, the time has come for something to happen here in the near future. And I would submit to you, at the rate that I read on their webpage recently, I think they sold 100 units, so they got 100 new members in the last year. They've got 470 sold. To get to 950, it's going to take at least five more years. But again, I don't know what it says, but if it's based on the 250 golf members again, it could be never. It could be there's 106 golf members, according to their webpage. So it took them 6 years to get there. So 1.5 times six, that'd be 9 more years before they would get to the point where they would have to start building the clubhouse. So, you know, is it going to be 5 years, 9 years, or never? Who knows? But I don't think that suits the folks that live in that community have relied on the representations well to have no idea if ever there will be a clubhouse. There's no guarantee of a clubhouse completion. The last time there was a requirement for an irrevocable letter of credit. Just so you know, Wells Fargo, and I put it in my materials here, is one of the four largest banks in the United States of America. In the year 2009, its total net profit exceeded $12 billion. Now, for them to come in here and say, we're really the receiver. No, they're not. They're Wells Fargo Bank. That's who has the property. They have plenty of money. There is no hardship. There is no financial hardship. The only one that they can claim is, we have a financial hardship because the 475 owners are going to have to pay more money. False. False. This document, this set of covenants that's recorded in the Recorder of Deeds office says that everybody that owns a lot is a member. That means Wells Fargo currently has 930 memberships in the club. This document also says that if those dues aren't paid, they become special assessments that become liens on the lots that are not paying. So Wells Fargo has 930 memberships. There are 1,400 members of the club, and the money to operate that club should be divided 1,400 ways. Now, for whatever reason, the developer and I guess the receivers continued this improper practice. They've only divided it 470 ways. So if properly applied, everyone in there, even with the clubhouse operating, will experience a significant reduction in their dues. So you've got 57 and 70 letters here tonight. They're all premised on the false belief that their amount paid per month or per quarter will go up. It will not. If properly followed, according to these covenants, they will actually pay less even after the clubhouse is built. Now, why doesn't Wells Fargo want to build the clubhouse? Well, they said there's 5 million initial reasons why they don't, because they don't feel like fronting the money. They'd rather sit on the property, not have to pay much money, hope that the market turns around someday, and then they'll start selling units. If they don't sell any units, doesn't sound like they're working very hard to do that right now, this could go on forever. So if you give them a 2-year extension here tonight even, they'll probably just be back in 2 years saying, can we get two more? So the problem is Wells Fargo has to face the covenants, properly apply them, build the clubhouse, and then since they are obligated for 60% of the lots, 60% of the club memberships, they will end up having to pay 60% of the operating costs. There won't be a deficit. And you notice you didn't hear Mr. Munn say tonight who made up this deficit. They didn't issue bonds and China buy them like the United States government does. Wells Fargo paid the deficit. And they happily paid it because it's a lot less than the 60% share that they're supposed to be paying pursuant to these covenants. So you got 127 objections, all based on a false assumption that their dues are going to go up when they're not. And you have promises that have been broken for years by the developer and then over the last year by Wells Fargo. So, look, I know you can't build start building a clubhouse in 3 weeks. That's logical. But 6 months, get started, come construction season next spring, build the clubhouse, pay your share, give the people what you've promised them, give the people what you've obligated yourself to give them under the RPC. This, it runs with the land. These are liens on the real estate. The obligations, the condition, number 10, and all the other conditions you impose are not just the developer. Oh, the developer's gone. Well, I guess nobody has to follow him anymore. Wrong. They are covenants running with the land. Whoever takes that land becomes obligated to follow those conditions. And Wells Fargo, rather than sending this to sheriff's sale, then either selling, letting somebody else buy it, or Wells Fargo takes it back by bidding their mortgage amount and then selling it off to developers, has decided we'd like to hold it, to keep it on hold because we think we can get a better return over the long term, selling it out when the economy gets better little by little. Fine, but you got to pay the price of operating. If you don't want to pay the price of operating, liquidate the asset. That's it. Then we don't have to have this problem. You don't have to have this problem. My client doesn't have to have the problem. Mr. Lank doesn't have to have this problem. It's all over. But they don't want to do that. We want to have it both ways and have their cake and eat it too. Not put out the money, but at the same time, get lots of extensions, almost a perpetual extension, so that they can sit and wait and recoup as much money as they can with the least amount of expense out of pocket in doing so. So I guess my point to you is I don't think they should do that. I think what this really boils down to is a big bank bailout. Wells Fargo is coming before you, and they'll come before County Council on December 7th, Delaware Day, and say, we want another big bank bailout. Wells Fargo got $25 billion in federal bailout funds, which they repaid at the end of last year. Now they're coming to you saying, give us a $5 million plus multi-million dollar annual bailout by letting us wait, even though it's time. So I would suggest to you, I would respectfully request that you, if you're going to give them any extension, make it very short and explain to the folks that are out there that if Wells Fargo does what it's supposed to, their annual dues or their monthly dues are not going to go up. So I think with all that information, I hope that you recommend to County Council that they give either no extension or a very short one and require the posting of surety. Now, irrevocable letter of credit, Wells Fargo can't come up with a $5 million letter of credit with $12 billion in annual profit? Cut me a break. That's ridiculous. So, again, you've heard all this. It doesn't make any sense. I think you'll agree once you get the facts that I've presented to you. I think there's another story, and I hope that you recommend accordingly. Thank you. Unless there are any other questions or any questions.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to Change of Zone 1697? Anyone else in opposition? Any of the commissioners or staff have any further questions? Before I close the public hearing, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. You're welcome to stay, spend the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision or you may call the office in the morning. I'm going to close the public hearing in a second. Just want to remind you that the staff and the members of the commission, we still have some further work to do this evening. So if you do decide to exit, if you would do so quickly and just hold your conversations till you're out in the hall, be obliged.